I grew up in the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church, which is the most conservative or one of the most conservative of the Lutheran sects, S-E-C-T-S. Although we are talking about gender today, so I know it could get a little confusing. And I had this longing when I was there to be a part of the sacred service. And I'd watch as, you know, for a long time, I was too young, I think, but then I realized that now some of my male friends and contemporaries were allowed to be acolytes. Yeah. Carl was one in the Lutheran church. And so I longed to be a part of this service, and I couldn't wait to ask the minister. And I was kind of a shy kid, so it was a big thing to go ask. And I said, I really want to be an acolyte. Can you imagine like a young person, like full of just desire, wanting to be a part, how we at Unity would just be so happy to find them a space, to allow them to do that thing that they were wanting to do so much. And he said, you can't. There's some kind of popping going on. And I said, why not? And he said, because only boys can be acolytes. I was so confused by that. I went home and I thought about it for days and days and days. What was it about boys that made them more qualified to light candles? I thought about anatomy. I mean, I couldn't figure it out. I'm glad we're laughing because we need that humor, right? We need that humor. But to really understand why I couldn't be an acolyte, we need to go back to the beginning. And I mean the beginning of humanity. We've always puzzled, right, about where, I mean, many of us, humanity over time has wondered about where did we really come from? No, really, where did we come from, right? And we never get a full and complete answer, at least in the outer world. Now, science has done what they can, and they said there was a big bang, a flaming forth, an intensified light from a star, and science says we're made of stardust. That's pretty cool, right? I mean, you're not even hearing that in the churches. You're hearing that from science. You are made of stardust. And that alone might be enough to know. Yet there's still that curiosity, but yeah, how did I go from being stardust to having this form and being on this earth? It's still curious, isn't it? And we have, of course, creation myths throughout all, or creation stories or creation truths, you decide, throughout many religious paths and cultures. Everybody has created something to say how we came or told a story. And, you know, those myths always have little bits of truth in them, of course, right? If not the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So I've always liked this idea of that Spirit created us to know itself. I think one of my faculty members in ministerial school said that, and it just made so much sense to me. Okay. Divine intelligence of the universe was swimming around as spirit in pure wholeness and oneness, and wouldn't possibly know itself unless there was some kind of mirror, unless there was some kind of contrast. And so in order to know itself, it began to separate itself into creating some contrast. So the galactic historian, that is a thing now, Debbie Solaris says that Source initially split itself into Mother God consciousness and Father God consciousness. That was the first main split. And because we know consciousness, we know life itself perpetuates itself in such a way that it always has this energy of expansion, right? Creativity. We want to know. We want to understand. We want to evolve. We want to become. That's spiritual consciousness. That's the impetus of life. So it makes sense that this creator, this source energy, began to expand out. And in that expansion from mother and father God consciousness, there was more expansion, and there were oversoul groups of high dimensional beings. And maybe there still are. I think there are. And one of those oversoul groups was called Elohim. Have you ever heard that term? Elohim. It's stated about 35 times in Genesis. Elohim means the plural Godhead. It means gods with an S. It means male and female. And it's right there in Genesis. It says that when we were created in the image and likeness of them. Let us create them in our image and likeness. So male and female, they created us. Can we see that scripture? Let us make humankind in our image, in our likeness. So male and female, God created them. So after many years of existence on earth in such a way, and this isn't just male and female form, right? This is masculine and feminine energy. It's always important to clarify that, because in our spiritual walk, we understand that all of us, regardless of male, female, or whatever gender expression we have masculine and feminine energy, right? And so this oversoul group, Elohim, was probably kind of curious about what would it be like to be a spiritual being in human form, to bring this masculine and feminine energy into a physical form. But we have long since forgot about those early days and about the plurality, it seems. But why and how? How did it happen that we did? After many years of existence on Earth, humans created something else. It's called patriarchy. In creation patriarchy, the historian Gerda Lerner talks about how patriarchy came into being about 3100 BCE. And it started because there were warring tribes, and the warring tribes, probably to hurt one another as much as they could, began to take the women that, as they conquered, and to subordinate the women sexually and economically, to enslave the women, and so on. At the same time, many very powerful goddesses were banished, dethroned, and banished from worship. And so then the lone masculine god was established. Vestiges of gender richness still remain in the scriptures, but they're like crumbs you gotta go looking for. Like, I mean, they're there, but of course, people were illiterate and could not read the Bible in their own languages until about the 16th century, when the Protestant Reformation occurred. Before that, it was all recitation by the male priests of the scriptures in Latin. So this became very established, right? God is Father, end of story. God's pronouns are he, him, end of story, right? And we've all just received that, allowed that in a way, believed it to be true. It's the thing is about like challenging those things, like challenging that minister who said, I couldn't be an acolyte because I wasn't a boy. It's like, I couldn't make sense of it because it wasn't true. There's a Tibetan nun who, you know, challenged the whole Tibetan system because she was told, yeah, you can reach a high state, but you'll never become enlightened. Why, she said, because you're a woman, of course. And she struggled with this for years and years and years. And then finally, she created her, she brought, she went into meditation for 12 years in a cave. She did things a lot of her male counterparts had never done. And she went back to those leaders and said, take it into prayer. Why can't women become enlightened? And they came back and said, we don't know. And she said, you don't know because it's not true. And the Dalai Lama has since said, women can be enlightened. But it takes a lot of fight, doesn't it? It takes a lot of fortitude. It takes a lot of truth-telling. It takes a lot of inner work to come to that place to say, why not? No. And yes to what we want. Yes to the unity of humanity. Yes to the allness of who we are. Yes to those broken and fragmented parts that we cast away so long ago. Mother God consciousness. Welcome home. So these vestiges are in the scriptures. The she-god speaks as wisdom in the Proverbs. But who would know? So many centuries passed. So long, so small, the part that was played. The belief that women were inferior to men became widespread, and it was spread by philosophers and teachers and popes and clergy and government leaders and so on. All authority figures were telling us, beating the same drum, that women are inferior to men. And you know how this goes. We know it only too well, right? How this whole patriarchal system goes. It's that in order to stay in power, I have to have an other who is inferior. And we know how it expands out from there. It's not just about gender. Well, now a big target is transgender, right? And then it expands out into people of color, and so on it goes, right, in every direction, and not necessarily in that order. Yeah, right. It's all of it. We know this. I don't need to talk about all that. We know it too well. We know the pattern of otherizing that becomes demonizing, that becomes war. And I say no to war. Do you say no to war?
Yes.
Yeah. And what do we say yes to? In the spirit of Mother Teresa, invite me to the peace rally. Let me be in the energy of yes, in the energy of all, in the energy of inclusivity, in the energy of love, in the energy of compassion, in the energy of kindness. That's what we're for. Sometimes we have to say no to something in order to really move forward in the yes. So in a chapter in the book Philosophia, Will Keepin shares this from a 13th century parable. It's from the mystical Zora text. It says, there was a king among the people, but the queen was not with the king. As long as the queen was not with the king, the people did not feel secure. They could not dwell safely. As soon as the queen came, all the people rejoiced and dwelled safely. Will points out two things in this parable. The people felt insecure. Anybody feeling insecure these days? The people were not dwelling in safety. Why? Because the queen wasn't there. Because the Mother God consciousness had been kicked out. Because the divine feminine was so far repressed that we didn't even know she existed anymore. And we were so out of balance that we feel insecure. We think we cannot dwell safely together anymore. This is a tragedy. We are in the midst of tragedy. But guess what? We've got resolutions. We've got spiritual power. We've got understanding of how we welcome home this energy that has been cast out in all of our hearts and start to embody it and live it and share it and heal with one another. We know that everyone suffers, right? When this kind of activity happens, this kind of imbalance, all of us suffer. Even if we think we're part of the group that has worldly power, there's still suffering, a lot of suffering. I've told you all this story before, but it's so poignant for me and my understanding of the gender wound. It was when my father was losing his favorite sister, who he was so close to cancer. And he and I were sitting at home by the fire one night, and he let a little tear trickle down, probably the first one I'd ever seen and the last one I ever saw him cry. And he said, "I'm such a coward for crying, for losing his beloved sister." It broke my heart, and it made me realize how deep this wounding is for all of us. Many believe the patriarchy has run its course. And some are laughing at that idea. But why do we laugh? Because true to form, it's not going to go down without a big fight. Sometimes the pendulum has to swing really wide in the opposite direction before it could come back and come back to center, right? We know this in our lives. We've seen it time and time again happen in our history. So the presidential inauguration prayer service was this week. Yes, I am going to talk about that. Bishop Marion Edgar Buddy gave this sermon on unity. It's very common at this traditional breakfast for the clergy person who's giving the service at some point to turn to the president and give a message given directly to them. And so Bishop Buddy did that during this time. It was a very short message. It was delivered in a very measured, heart-centered, kind tone. And this is essentially all she said. "Mr. President, millions of people are trusting you right now. And I'd like," she basically asked, "in the name of our loving God, will you extend some mercy on people who are frightened right now?" She named some people: children who are gay and lesbian, transgender, tax-paying, hardworking immigrants. Maybe it was the naming, I don't know. But right out of the patriarchal playbook came the response: "Liar, we're going to kill you." She's gotten those threats. And by a well-known media outlet, "Satan." A message on mercy and compassion. What have we come to? This is not who we are. This is not who we are. And that pushback, of course, came through men and women. It's not about form. It's about the wound. All the way back to the split and everything we made of it since then. And our work as spiritual beings is to heal, is to bring her back within all of us. And what is that divine feminine energy? Compassion and mercy is part of it, right? Forgiveness and kindness, justice, all of that. And we need the masculine and the feminine together. And what does sacred masculine energy look like? It doesn't look like violence. It doesn't look like aggression. It doesn't look like fragility unless it's out of balance. And we have gotten way out of balance. But the way out of balance, to me, is the hope that the turn is truly happening. That the shift is happening in a profound, intense way, as intense as it must have been when that burning light occurred in the heavens and the big bang, the flaming forth happened. And so it's back into the intensity of that light to know that there are times we do have to speak truth to power. There are times we do have to muster up our courage. There are times we do need to act on behalf of others who don't look like us because they are not being included. And it's all part of those great arms of unity, right? That brings back the pieces of ourselves and brings back the pieces into our relationships and brings back the pieces into our communities and to our government and to our world. The earth is compromised by this wound. We know this. I mean, she'll be fine, but we might not be. So how do we navigate all this? How do we come back into this kind of healing and reconciliation? There's actually an organization that does this work. It's called Gender Equity and Reconciliation International. The co-founders are some friends of mine, Cynthia Bricks and Will Keepin. Will, I mentioned earlier, who wrote that chapter in the book. These two also wrote the book Divine Duality. And their work has been all about this healing. In the early days, it was healing between just men and women. Now it includes all gender expressions. But it does come down to these pieces of us that are missing. And they're very, she's a Unitarian minister, and he's a physicist, but has a real depth of spiritual experience. And so they bring that masculine, feminine, sacred, divine together and help us to heal the wounds that have occurred through time. So you might want to come to the introductory workshop on April 6th and sign up for the intensive weekend, because it does require 23 hours of time together. And that's just the beginning, probably. They say that their work is that in order to engage in their work, it takes a willingness to enter deeply into gender-based process of personal and collective truth-telling, discovery, and transformation between women, men, and all genders. And they have their work is connected to and reflective of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that happened in South Africa to heal apartheid and was led by Desmond Tutu. And I think there's a picture of Desmond, and that's Cynthia and Will. Of course, having a laugh, because Desmond Tutu is like full of joy, right? Back to laughter. We need the laughter. So you may or may not choose to do this Jerry work that's coming to Unity, but I'm very excited that we are bringing it to Unity. And of all places, to really be an epicenter of this kind of healing, why not here? Right? Here and here. Yeah. Let us be a community that is known for healing and reconciliation, for bringing the fragmented pieces of self and each other and community back into our namesake, unity, wholeness, oneness. That's what we're about. There are other things you can do to help yourself, to help all of us, I think, in this process of healing and reconciling, and most of all, balancing these energies of masculine and feminine within us. You know, what does the sacred masculine look like versus the sort of, you know, anxious, fragile masculine that overcompensates with aggression and domination and all that stuff that we know well? The sacred masculine is supportive and strong. The sacred masculine within us is one of integrity. It does what it says. And action, really clear, right action. Those are ways our masculine shows up. And so we all are really familiar with masculine energy, both in its wonderful forms, its beautiful forms, its powerful forms, and its not so great forms. So it's not about saying, oh, no masculine. It's all about balance. It's all about just bringing in what was lost. And some of it is that sacredness of the masculine, and a big piece of it is the feminine. And in the feminine, right, we know that woundedness of, you know, everything that I've already spoken of, I think we know this. I don't need to go over that again. It's just those missing parts. But so one of the things we can do then is to love the parts of ourselves that we have cast out. all the parts of ourselves that we have cast out, to start to look and to welcome back in, right? Like Rumi's poem, The House of Belonging. Welcome back in the sadness, welcome back in the anger, welcome back in the whatever it is, you know, whatever those pieces are, just let them come back in and not be judged and criticized and cast out anymore, otherized, demonized. So the inner work is always the number one work that we do, right? And there's another piece of this inner heart work anyway, and that is to be gracious to each other. You know, when we talk about privilege, it doesn't become yet another weapon to turn on one another. And sometimes I think that is how we talk about it. But let's understand that privilege is just the choice to be able to walk away from something difficult and painful. And we're choosing to walk toward here, right? So we've already made that choice. We've already overcome whatever that privilege is. So we'd be gracious to each other to recognize that some of us don't know what it's like to have to navigate space to feel safe. Some of us don't know, have never experienced that. And so let's be gracious, because new skills need to be learned. New ways of being need to be understood with each other. There's all kinds of new rules in this society. The Me Too movement brought a lot of it forward. Now men are kind of like, what do I do? Right? Some men feel that way, I think, you know? And we're a huggy community. Can I hug? Can I shake hands? Can I, you know? I don't know what to do. All the rules are new. Anybody with me here? Yeah, of course. And I have deep compassion for that. We have to be gracious to each other, or we won't heal together. It won't be an inviting space to come in if you think you're going to be criticized for having privilege. Of course, we all have privilege in a variety of ways. But now we're saying, that's not so important to me as it is for me to choose to be part of the solution, to choose to be part of the wholeness, to choose to be part of the oneness, to choose to heal, to choose to reconcile, to reach out my heart and my hands and say, yes, you are welcome. You are all welcome. Here and here and here, right? This is who we are. Let us not fall the way of division and meanness and cruelty and aggression and violence and otherizing and demonizing. No. No more patriarchy. Our co-founders, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. Oh, there's so many men in here for the men's group launch. I love it. Dinner. Yeah, dinner. Oh, dinner is tonight. All right, all right. I've lost track of where I was headed there. Fillmore's, thank you. Charles, somebody's listening. One of our new people. Charles and Myrtle Fillmore were the co-founders of Unity, if you don't know, and one of the statements of faith that they made is, there will be a day, I'm paraphrasing, that the divine feminine will take her rightful place beside Jehovah. Essentially, the queen will return to the land of our soul and to the land of our country and our world. Coming at our invitation. Part of the feminine energy is being receptive, is being open, is being willing to receive, is putting down the shields, laying down the weapons, and saying, I don't need any of that because I have the courage to be vulnerable and open-hearted and meet difficult things. And that is what we shall do together. Let's affirm it together. I honor the divine feminine and sacred masculine and help heal our collective gender wounds. And so it is.